I'm now turning on the recording device, and so now we're recording, and what will happen is in about 2 weeks this will appear on boardoptions.com, and then we'll be sending it out to my 18,000 dearest friends on LinkedIn and our 950 board members at the Board Talent Bank. So if you want to, you can have links so you can listen to it. I'm pleased to introduce the moderator and the writer of the case, George Nebel. George is a senior advisor to Avault. It's a Boston-based private equity firm focusing on a family office, and he's an advisory board member to Cross Country Consulting, which is a financial accounting and advisory firm. George serves as a member of the board of directors of an audit committee chair for a public company called EverQuote. George is a member of the board of trustees of the Yawkey Foundation. He serves as chair of the investment committee. From 2012 to 2017, George served as the Northeast market leader and managing partner of the Boston office of Ernst & Young. And I would say under George's leadership, Ernst & Young several times won one of the best places to work for in Boston. George is a CPA with extensive experience in accounting, SEC, and financial reporting matters. He received a BS in accounting from Boston College. George, are you there?
I am here, Larry. And
take it away.
Faces. Great seeing you. And I'm looking out, Carlo, Peter, Rob, Jay. There's a lot of familiar faces, and it's great to see you. Thanks for including me, Larry. It's great. No, I appreciate the chance, Larry, to kick off. And again, for all of you, this case, which a derivative of it I presented, I think it was about 3.5 years ago, Larry. But it was really a good discussion, and hopefully we'll get some good engagement as part of this. I know the breakout group that I was fortunate to be part of, group really raised some good questions and points of view. You know, I guess, you know, just stepping back for a second before I kind of throw it out to get some points from the group, you know, you really think about the unique role of the audit committee as a committee of the board. It's really one of the few committees that actually has a very critical role, particularly in light of the regulatory environment, in terms of working with the outside auditors, the independent public accountants, as they're referred to, but also the management of the company. As I've always said, it's like a triangle. The auditors work with management, but they report to the audit committee. The audit committee does not, you know, necessarily perform audit work separately, but they do rely on the professionalism, the independence of the audit committee to fulfill their function and ultimately report out to the stakeholders of the company. You know, management is responsible for the financial statements of the company. That's their job, one of their many, many jobs. And so the uniqueness of this working with and working for creates a triangle that, when it works well, can be very effective. Hopefully what you got through this case was a situation, unfortunately, where dysfunction for a whole bunch of reasons, time, complexity of the business, relationships, change in role. I think there's probably been about 7 different factors that went through to kind of result in the situation where you've got the CFO really putting the board at the same time that the audit partner is putting the board / the audit committee in a tough spot, right? Almost coming down to choosing how to get through to this next chapter for the company. So, you know, those are a little bit of just what I wanted to be my opening marks. I really wanted to kind of turn. I know our group, Joe, I think you had some good, Joe McCadden, I think you had some good comments, observations as to Larry and Lucia. Maybe turn on them first to open it up, but really want to hear a bunch of you, and I'll call out some names, the faces I see that are familiar, to get some points of view, and so we can have a good discussion on this. So, Joe McCadden, you there, live? You may have already left for cocktail hour.
Unmute yourself, Joe. You're muted. There. Okay.
There we go. You didn't go for cocktail party yet.
No, not at all. Still drinking water.
Yeah.
So I think some of the things that we talked about were really getting the bringing these two parties together who really had two different viewpoints. And we have the complexity of a new firm, a new CFO, what their roles are and how they're thinking about their own personal situation, as well as the overall situation that they had walked into. And one of the things we talked about was, do we provide some kind of protection for the CFO, you know, that who probably feels in a sacrificial position? We also talked about maybe using the concurring partner to help bring in a different point of view. So it was really about, one, how do we get to the bottom of the situation, but how do we do it in a way that brings the parties together? But really, ultimately, it came down to the audit committee taking a more active role in directing the outcome of getting to the bottom of this to preserve the company.
Mm-hmm. No, that's great, Joe, in terms of some of your observations. Larry, I know you had some point of views and maybe Lucia too.
You're on mute, Larry.
Okay, I'm off.
There you go.
My thoughts were, you know, when I read the case, I didn't think those things happened anymore. And I never thought not only did they not happen, but that they could go on for so long without anything being done. And my end conclusion, so I let some other people speak, was that the first thing that had to happen was we had to revive the patient. Mm-hmm. The company needed to do whatever needed to be done to have their have their books in order so that he could be signed off for, and then deal with all the other, the CFO, the CEO, the board members. I mean, there's a lot of different problems, but the first thing that had to happen was mm-hmm. to get the sign off from the accounting firm and go on from there.
Got it. Lucia, would you agree? I mean, I think Larry was pretty vocal about that in our group, but love to get some reaction after your comments.
Yeah, I do agree that you've got to triage the patient or you have nobody to work on over the long haul. Mm-hmm. I'd just make two comments about the board themselves, because clearly negligent might feel like too strong a word, but definitely mm-hmm. complacent. Now, ISS mm-hmm. looks at sort of the hygiene of a board. And one of the important things is the director's self-evaluation every year. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, taking that a little more seriously in light of the things that have been found underneath the rug. And the other thing I brought up sort of jokingly, but it's true, you know, the cost of their D&O insurance is going to triple over this. And that is, you know, an enormous cost to the company, but also should, you know, get the attention of people thinking about liability and fiduciary responsibility.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. And your comment about the board going through the self-evaluation, I think clearly a great practice that when taken seriously, all companies, but obviously in this one, following up on Larry's comment would have been one that might've been more helpful. Any of the other groups, just initial response? I mean, I'm looking at the screen, but I see Peter Rocket out there. Peter, you're never someone that's quiet. I'd love to hear what your thoughts.
Well, George, our group discussed the role of the CEO, who is a constant through it. Mm-hmm. We had the change in the audit mm-hmm. firms and the CFOs, and would like to know, with the recommendations coming out, you know, it seemed like that the response from management kept getting kicked down the road. And where's the accountability mm-hmm. For the CEO and bringing in the new CFO? And then secondarily was from the role of the audit committee, there's disagreement between the approach from the audit partner mm-hmm. and the CFO. We'd like to hear separately what their plan is, and then see if one is overkill and one is actually very solid, efficient way to resolve it, or, you know, get those, you know, hear them separately, but then bring them together to say, okay, this is what we need to do to fix this once and for all. It's been deferred too long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great comment, Peter. Yeah, I think that engagement of the two parties where things have unfortunately gotten, you know, as you say, there can always be different alternative views, but before it got to the stage of a disagreement, could the parties work together and what was the audit committee role? Now, great observation. And I think the CEO comment, anyone else pick up on the CEO responsibility?
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
Our group. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Ladies first.
Okay. Well,
there you go, Cynthia. You got the
floor. Yeah, thank you. We talked a lot about, you know, these issues that you all mentioned where, you know, the culture is really systemically problematic, you know, mm-hmm. and Jennifer comes into a situation like that where we have, you know, probably the wrong board, right? You know, a distant board, doesn't meet very often, doesn't have industry skills. Also, we talked about the fact that, you know, maybe although it is important to triage the patient, maybe there was a rush to release the information because it's unclear to us anyway, who was really at fault here. You know, we have this curious executive session that seems to be attended by the partner, the audit partner, but not the CFO. Mm-hmm. You know, that's highly unusual in my experience. And so we were thinking through, you know, one of the things a CEO, to your actual question, you know, needs to be briefed, you know, at least by the audit committee, because it appears that Jennifer and Frank Wren were the people who brought the information to the audit committee, and then the audit committee decided, poof. There's no communication between the audit committee and the CEO so as to be, you know, briefed by this, who would ultimately be, as you say, as we all said, responsible for the financial statements. You know, what went wrong? Any CEO really needs to know what went wrong. So to dovetail, you know, what Peter just mentioned.
Yeah, great observation, Cynthia.
We had talked about that as well in our team. Yeah. And, you know, if you look at the nature of this issue around revenue recognition, this isn't an issue where it's purely financial. I mean, this is something that typically involves the CEO, all the executives, the incentive system, their metrics, you know. So there's the CEO is probably an active participant in this whole thing. So we just sort of asked the question, you know, what's the CEO been doing all along? And this is obviously not an issue that this is an issue that is discussed all the time and at the executive level. So we just sort of had more questions for the CEO on that.
Oh, great.
On Peter's thoughts, a couple other things we threw out as considers, because we thought it was much more than just, hey, we need to do the restatement. We need to do it correctly. It came up with the D&O insurance probably tripling. That's going to be an issue. If we've not sued already, I got to believe we will be sued. So our legal fees are potentially going to go up. We've kind of kicked around what I call this governance issue. So our team really talked about not only the governance issue of the board, but also of the CEO and the executives. And as we work through this, we're thinking that we need to focus on, yeah, we need to get through this, do the triage, make sure the patient's going to live, but do it in a scalable and a sustainable way. And so the things we threw out, again, we didn't know enough, but should we engage a consultant that holistically would come in and advise the board to minimize the risk to the board, minimize risk to the company? What's the short-term, mid-term, and long-term things that we need to do to get back on track, but to do it in a way that truly is sustainable and scalable? So I throw that out because at the end, there's got to be a story here. A press release is the best way to tell your story. So whatever we do, we need to do it correctly, but then we need to kind of morph that into how do we want to project that for our shareholders, stakeholders, and others.
Great. George, I would say our group, many of the things you guys discussed were important to us. We were talking about the board's audit committee and making sure that they weren't lax or showing up not as sophisticated as they should be and asking the right questions and wondering why year after year, they were on the razor's edge of not getting things done in a, mm-hmm. in a timely manner. That to me speaks to the disciplines that probably should have been in use. We also talked about the they should be considering potentially, maybe if not a new CEO, back to that governance piece. I think Brian, mm-hmm. you were just mentioning making sure that you're really putting in some practices into place. Mike he was a part of our group, myself, Robin, and him, and he was sharing some different things that he had gone through as a CEO in the past, having come in and trying to clean up some of these things. But one of the fun parts for me on these sessions is learning. And I had asked Mike a question in the beginning. I said, well, what's going on with this warranty? And then later on, it's called an upgrade. And we were trying to figure out the practices there. But it was a fascinating discussion because here we are, obviously, hindsight's 2020, George, but you know, we still were kind of asking key questions over and over again, going, how could a group that is kind of paid and they're supposed to have expertise, and you know, folks like ourselves are asking these questions pretty immediately. So at any rate, we just wanted to throw that out. I don't know if Robin or Mike wanted to add some more context.
That's great, Ingrid. No, great input. No, you guys are hitting on some really, really good points.
Just to supplement that a little bit, I mean, you know, all these comments about process, you know, and then it's like, but you're missing the boat. You're missing the business connection to it. You know, the second to last page talks about extended warranty versus an upgrade. And when I read that, I'll be honest with you, I was laughing my ass off. I'm like, how do you miss this? This is fundamental. Who are these people? You know, what's going on? It just was so fundamental. So we also said we love Jennifer. It was one of our, we're like, bravo, you know, this woman, whoever she is, this is great. She walks in and this is like easy for her. And she actually talked to people in the company to figure out what was going on in the business. Yeah. And then we also said we'd fire the audit firm. what the hell are these people doing? You know, so that was, Robin, did you want to add something, Robin?
No, I was just going to say we sort of danced around the issue, but when you said, what the hell are these people doing? I mean, they had not one, but two partners who looked at the books of this organization for at least, I think it's 7 years. Mm-hmm. And no one questioned how they were recognizing revenue. I mean, it just seemed like sort of, you know, accounting 101. So yes, we thought that like,
yeah, no, you know, great comment in terms, particularly, you know, and for those of you familiar with the issue, you know, it can, warranty and upgrades is totally different world. How it's positioned and what's presented can be borderline fraudulent, right? Depending upon what you're told the story. So you guys have raised a great point. You know, how deep did people go to really understand the business? That this is a fundamental reality and it would have implications on the accounting, but also how, you know, the company did business with its customers, you know, promises, all that stuff.
Wouldn't George, later on, the analysts care about this? So when you're going to do your present, you know, you have to go to your calls, your earnings calls, they're going to be second guessing what you say because you're not going to have that, you know, longevity of actually being honest and understanding what's happening in your own business. I would imagine he would be skewered at least for the first few calls.
Yeah, no, I mean, and again, this company had some real challenges, particularly when the business, and I think hopefully many of you picked up early on, you know, the business started and that always becomes the stress point. You know, the accounting always follows the business and the reporting, but you know, when a business starts hitting some rough spots, you know, product delays, challenges with its technology, you know, relationships with customers, you're going to start getting into areas that are going to ultimately or could result in, depending upon the culture of the company, you know, how those things are addressed. Do you deal with them up front or do you kick them down the road? Number of you, and Ingrid, you hit it too, the culture issue. And I know culture is the word of the 2020-21, right, that we all throw around. But, you know, here, this is one that it was pervasive, right, for years, that it was really a kind of kick the can down the road. Let's get through the quarter. Let's get through the analysts, make sure that they're okay. Don't worry necessarily what's down the road. I think Larry in our group said he can't believe this goes on in companies. How many of you really believe that this kind of behavior happens. I guess, Larry, we could do show of hands if we were in the room.
It goes on, Larry.
But I could you know, share with you that it's probable, right, Marianne, that this happens quite a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and I would just add that, you know, sometimes trying to quickly find who is at fault or who is it to blame. So yep. that we have somebody to sacrifice to the street.
Yep.
Can be another form of kicking the can down the road.
Yep. Agree with you.
So you have to be really careful that the, you know, the sacrificial lamb doesn't actually allow the status quo to continue.
Yeah.
That doesn't.
So Larry, excuse me, George.
Yes.
Our team was very vocal also. And so we won't go over the CEO being responsible for the enterprise, but he was around long enough that he should have known something like this. Because a product organization failed, a couple of others. But, you know, you wrote the case to be mystifying for us. What was the timeline from when she came in and first discovered, looked under the right rugs, first discovered that there was an issue here to where we get over here where you're talking about the scare language that you had in there about delisting? So that must have been, that had to be several quarters or multiple months, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was basically 3 to 6 months. It was about 3 to 6 months by the prime time. When Jennifer came on board, it was within 60 days that questions started being raised about these practices, about warranty upgrades. And that, you know, to your point, just opened up Pandora's box, you know, because again, you'd like to say it was only one thing the company was struggling with. This was the principal one that I'll call it the straw that broke the camel's back. But underneath it, you started peeling back the onion and you had all the other issues.
One of the things we talked about in our group, which is Craig's group, is that revenue recognition, there's contracts with all of your clients. So somebody wrote that contract and warranties are paid up front and upgrades are paid later on. And no one, and they had all this input from all these people and everybody just overlooked it. Or purposefully put it that way. I don't know. There were lots of different distribution channels too, so that complicated it.
But. Yeah.
Yeah, but I found it
Mary and that
George,
it was just to ask you a quick question. Is it common, or did you think it was unusual that Frank actually excluded Jennifer from the executive session?
Yeah, that's a question we had.
Yeah, you know, it's for public companies, at least annually, best practice is that the audit firm meets with the audit committee one-on-one without the presence of management. Companies do it more frequently. It's kind of an expectation. It gets back to that triangle, Robin, that I was talking about, audit committee, management, whatever. Now, Frank and Jennifer had been working together for 6 months, so it wasn't like they weren't talking about these issues, but it really came to a head, particularly, Phil, to your point, you know, as people, I think it's been mentioned a few times by Joe and others, as people were trying to keep the patient alive, how are we going to get to the finish line? What's the best path to the finish line? Because again, you've got a company that is not reporting externally, right? They can't get their numbers out. Therefore, Wall Street and others are starting to raise questions about the viability of the company. And so hopefully that answered your question. You know, yes, a good practice is for the board to meet with the auditors one-on-one at least once a year with Jennifer in this situation. However, the expectation would be that Jennifer and Frank are talking to each other every day, right?
Well, George, I just, if you wouldn't mind, now that you're revealing a little bit more of the behind the curtain.
Larry told me to wait till 6:20 on that.
What type of dialogue was Jennifer having with the CEO that she was reporting to? What did the CEO know, and when did he or she know it?
Before George answers, let me use my role as timekeeper just to let you know it's 6:15, so we have 15 more minutes.
Okay, good, Larry, thank you. So Greg, thank you for putting me on the spot. The CEO was informed.
Okay.
But the CEO clearly did not want to be actively engaged. Basically said, get this fixed to the CFO.
Yeah.
I brought you in, I fired the prior CFO because after years of this stuff happening and him not getting it fixed, I brought you in, Jennifer. So I think the question was raised by a number of you really well. You know, when a situation like this happens, ultimately the CEO should take some level of ownership
and the reins. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, Greg. The CFO was kind of out there a little bit on their own.
Did they
change the public company?
How they interacted at all? Forgive me for talking over somebody.
What was that, Greg? I'm sorry.
Did they shortly after uncovering the nice presents, did they change the cadence of their meeting regimens at all? Did anything else substantively change when they had their oh poop moment? Did they change substantively how they interacted?
A little bit, Greg, but not a lot, not enough. And, you know, I think the issue also is, you know, now the CFO is feeling the pressure to get this done.
Yeah.
And the question, and we'll get into it in the next few minutes to get some reaction, because I think, I forget who raised the point, I think it might have been Mike. You know, if you're the CFO and you're in the spot and your CEO is saying, get it done, go get resources. So the company did get external resources to come in and help them go through all these contracts and all that. But if you don't feel like the path to getting to the next stage, you're going to reach common ground with your audit firm based on style, based on, I think it's alluded to in the case, Jennifer's path to getting closure was not reconciling to the partner. What do you do? If the partner is saying, geez, I think this is probably going to take 6 to 9 months, and the CFO is saying, well, I think it should take 3, and here's what we're doing, you know, as an audit committee or member, what would you do?
Yeah.
And bridge that. I think we got a question from Joe Hyman. What about the general counsel of the company? Do they have any responsibility for it? They did not get actively involved in the process. And actually, they had changed general counsels from what I'll call some of the original contract writing that existed with these complex arrangements.
Yeah.
So the CFO, to a degree, was a little bit out there and looking to find out, did she have the right partner to get to the finish line?
So nobody's in Walpole then, right?
Excuse me?
Nobody's in Walpole.
No one went to Walpole on this. Those are covered by God knows what, but
Danbury, Connecticut.
I've got a question for George, if I may. George,
yeah, please, Phil.
In your professional career, have you seen when there's an executive session at the audit committee level? Have you seen interaction where the audit firm is commenting on the competency of the CFO, and without necessarily the CFO understanding that?
Well, you know, Phil, great question. And first of all, good members of the audit committee should be asking, whether it be both the CFO, do they have the right team, talent, get the feedback of the CEO in assessing the finance organization? But on the other hand, also getting that feedback from the audit committee or the audit partner. I would share with you that I'll tell a funny story. Hopefully you can all laugh about this. This is another live one that I would never put down in a case. I would always make sure that before I went and met with the audit committee, from true transparency, I'd make sure that CEO and CFO knew, you know, if I had an issue, I was going to them first.
Yeah.
I was going to go running to the audit committee. But I'd also tell them if I had an issue, like, I don't think your controller is strong enough, or I think you need to build up some more resources in this group or whatever. I'd be really clear on saying to the CEO and CFO, hey, if they ask me, I'm going to tell them. So you better be ready to respond. So I think a good board member should be asking Phil that, but a good partner should be communicating to the CEO, CFO, in full transparency what he's going to say, he or she is going to say. Just a real one, Larry, I know I'm on the clock, but hopefully that people can relate to. So I was a rookie partner. My hair was not as gray as it was. It was 1990. When you pick up another client from one of your partners in a firm, sometimes you get handed a pile of dog do. And that's professional, Larry. Hopefully you don't have to edit that on the screen. This company was a tech company, which most of my clients were. For those of you familiar with shipping boxes, they were shipping real product, but they were shipping them to customers that would sign paperwork saying they'd pay for it maybe in about a year, year and a half. And the company had developed a poor practice of recognizing that revenue. So separate from a very poor business practice, i.e., as you can imagine, they had receivables that were out over 365 days. You had a really, really bad business practice. Like, what are you doing? And this company was on the bleeding edge on everything. All their accruals were, there was not a lot of excess reserves. So this is 1991, and this is before Sarbanes-Oxley, and where many of the rules changed around putting the audit committee in more responsibility. So fast story, CEO, and I talked to him the night before going in. I said, listen, if the board asks me where you stand on revenue recognition, I'm going to be upfront with them and say, you guys are on the bleeding edge. You're taking revenue. Yes, contractually, the customer owes it. Yes, the product's been shipped, but I think you got a bad business practice, but this is, you've developed this. You have no reserves, whatever. So the story is the CEO says, yep, yep, heard you, whatever. But, you know, we're in a turnaround. The board is 100% behind me. And before you speak, I'm going to talk to them about executive compensation. I was like, oh, okay, great. So we're waiting outside the boardroom, 8 o'clock board meeting. We're supposed to go in at 8:30. The board asks us to come in at 8:05. They kicked the CEO and CFO out and then started asking the type of questions, which I knew they were going to ask about, talk to us about the business practices, the accruals, all this stuff. They had had a new audit committee member come on. And I told them what I had told the CEO. And during the call, it was a 3-hour audit committee meeting. Two audit committee members resigned while we were there, which I had never had in my lifetime. It's never happened. One turned and said, hey, thanks for giving all the facts, but there isn't enough D&O insurance for this company to protect me. I'm out of here. And he proceeded to walk out the meeting. We wound up only having one audit committee member left. And ultimately they brought the rest of the board in, and it was not a good day for the CEO for that company. So I only get back to Phil, your question. You know, what do you share? When do you share it? But also the CEO has to take some ownership and involvement in this process and can't put the CFO out there all on their own.
As we were talking, I sort of said, well, who's in charge? And we had a lot of discussion about the culture of the company. You know, culture financially is permissive. It's coming from somewhere else. You know, it's not just the finance doing that. Yeah. So.
No, Phil, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, and hopefully it came through pervasively. This company was always, and the CEO, actually wonderful individual, but really did not have an interest in that. And really it was all about getting to the numbers. Getting to the numbers meant you kept Wall Street happy, meant you kept the board peaceful. But, you know, at the same time where the business was being challenged, right? And finally relenting to the pressure of realizing he needed a new CFO, Jennifer had to come in and really try to get the train reshifted. So separate from the business itself. Larry, I know we're kind of hitting up on the 5-minute mark, but before I, you know, uncover the storyline, anybody with any final comments, thoughts?
Larry, you're unmuted.
Just out of curiosity, what happened to Jennifer and where is she now?
Jennifer left 2 years after getting the company turned around. CEO left. They brought a new CEO in. Jennifer, the company did get up its reporting and stay in grace for a brief time with NASDAQ. The business, though, was really challenged. And Jennifer earned her stripes and moved on to a bigger and better opportunity. What happened in this, and it was really a unique situation. Phil, you asked a question early on. I did have, similar to Larry and Marianne's session here, I did have a seat at the table as I was the managing partner, but also the concurring partner, as Joe alluded to, for this situation. And I had just stepped into the concurring partner role and realized that this thing was, understood what the CFO was trying to do, understood also what the partner was trying to get done, realized that this was a potential disaster that could take and tried to diffuse it. So a couple things, the CFO brought in a lot of resources to try to get the patient back on path. The firm offered not only me, but one other partner come up and support Frank, just to give any of the other members some appreciation here. Changing partners on middle of a restatement process, particularly with the regulators, the PC and the SEC is kind of a death warrant. It's what they look for. So you had a situation where changing the partner, which the CFO did want the partner off the account, was just not a solution we could work through, but we committed to give them two more. We also asked, as the outside auditors, that the audit committee would have to be actively more through this process to make sure that we could all get to the finish line, keep it alive. The CFO, in Jennifer's defense, she didn't have confidence that we could deliver, the outside auditors, Frank and the team, and had a pre-existing relationship with another firm. So before anything escalated to what I'd call professional disagreements, which would have been reportable to the SEC and PCOB, Jennifer brought in another Big Four firm, which was a very high risk gamble. To her defense, they didn't get it done in 3 months. It took them 6 months, which was somewhat on the lower end of our timeline for getting it done. However, I give her credit that she was willing to take the risk and get a firm on board that could do it. I don't know if the audit committee got any more involved and engaged before the CEO, but the reality is that to Larry's opening comment when we broke into the session, the reality is this stuff does happen. And I think as a board member, it's okay to ask tough questions. Your skin's on the line. When a situation happens, this was not necessarily choosing sides, you know, and had to get to a solution. And Jennifer, you know, presented to the audit committee that she believed and they supported her, which I give them credit for standing up and doing that versus having her out on an island and potentially running risks. So, you know, the reality is this stuff does happen. And I think being engaged, asking the tough questions, but making sure that the triangle is working, auditor, audit committee board, and management, requires more than a, you know, quarterly drive-by shooting, as I used to call them. You know, you need to make sure the pulse and keeping people involved and engaged.
George, I want to thank you very much for your case and for your comments. And I want to thank all of you for attending tonight's Seat at the Table program. Congratulations. Next month, we will have another case, and I hope you can attend. Until then, enjoy the winter, or in the case of George, enjoy the sun. Take care, everybody.
Thank you, everyone. Be safe. Thank you, George. Be safe. Thank you all.
George.
Thanks, Larry.
George. I want to just, we're off the tape, right? So I can talk directly to George.
I will stop the recording. Yep.
First of all, George gave the robotic